So much so that he asked permission to try and fix the problem for us. He couldn't actually do it without taking the whole cupboard off the wall, which he decided was too much work. See, when you first see it, it's really irritating. Over time, you get used to it. We're now totally used to it. We don't notice. When any of you now come round, I'm sure you'll all be looking for it, and you'll point it out, and we'll notice it again. But we've forgotten about it. It's just become part of the backdrop to life. Part of the habit, part of what we do, kind of just experience on a day-to-day basis. And so we've forgotten. It doesn't really have the same effect it used to. Today is the first Sunday of the month, which means that as is our pattern, we come to the Lord's table together. I wonder, does the Lord's Supper become a bit like our wonky cupboard? You know, you notice it, it's really significant when you become a Christian in the first few years, maybe. But over time, it just becomes part of the backdrop. We don't really think about it anymore. We just kind of do it. We've gone to autopilot. It's just a habit, and a mindless one at that. That might be our danger as we take the Lord's Supper. Our mind drifts to what we've got to do when we get home, or what work's going to look like at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, or whatever else it is, what sports on this afternoon, what texts I've got to reply to. And our mind doesn't dwell in what's really happening there and then, because we're so used to it. It's just a habit and a pattern that's become mindless over time. What we're going to do for a few minutes before we take the Lord's Supper together is hopefully shake us out of that mindset. That mindset that I think we all fall into, that I've fallen into at times. And we're going to do that by thinking about three things that verses 19 and 20 show us about the Lord's Supper. Firstly, we're going to think about the cost of the Lord's Supper. Verse 19, Jesus took bread, gave thanks and broke it, and gave it to them, saying, "This is my body given for you." There was an immense physical cost for Jesus, an immense physical cost. He gave his body. Just in the next 24 hours alone, think about what Jesus' body goes through. He goes to Gethsemane. And so overcome with grief and stress about what is ahead, he sweats drops of blood. I'm sure all of us have at times experienced physical symptoms of anxiety and stress. Tight chest, struggling to breathe. Jesus experienced that and a whole load more. He experienced it to the point of sweating drops of blood. He knew that's what he was giving his body over to when he said these words. But that wasn't the end. That was just the beginning. Jesus gets arrested and then pretty poorly treated, to say the least. He's whipped, probably opening up gashes all over his body. He's punched with fists. He's slapped with open hands. He's spat at. He's hit with staves. Battered and bruised. Wounds poured open. Blood pouring out, mixed with the saliva of other people mocking him that's been spat on him and dripping down his face. That's what Jesus gave his body over to. But it didn't end there. Jesus gave his body over to a crown of thorns. We've probably all been snagged by a thorn. It's pretty annoying. 5 minutes later, normally it's stopped hurting. This wasn't that. This was a thorns twisted together to make a crown and forced down onto his forehead, almost definitely piercing the skin and leaving him in constant pain. As he's mocked because he's supposedly the king. He really is the king, but the people in front of him don't know it. And so they mock him for it, shoving this excruciating crown of thorns on his head. With a body battered and bruised, exhausted, he's given a heavy wooden cross and told to carry it up a hill. Pretty hard work at the best of times when you're in peak physical condition. Almost impossible when you're in this state, so much so that Jesus can't do it. His physical body has been battered and bruised, exhausted, as he can't carry the cross all the way up the hill. He gets carried up for him. And he gets to the top of the hill, and he gets loaded onto it. Nails through his wrists, nails through his ankles, lifted up for all to see, publicly shamed. That's what he gave his body over to. And then he gave his body over to every single breath being so painful, forcing himself up to gasp for air, and in doing so, having to push against those very nails that were hammered through his wrists and ankles. That is the cost that the Son of God, who sits in heaven, went through for us. Those words trot off our tongue, don't they? This is my body, which I gave for you. They are not insignificant words. That is an incredible thing for Jesus, the Son of God, to say. He gave his body for us. He didn't just give his body. He poured out his blood, verse 20. This cup is the new covenant in my blood, which is poured out for you. Those wounds opened him up so that he bled. His blood poured out then. But more significantly, his blood poured out to the point of death. Blood in the Bible, so often picturing the very life of a person. Jesus saying that I am going to give myself up even to death for you. Not just to pain, but to death. The physical cost. That's what's highlighted here, but it's not even to mention the spiritual cost that Jesus went through. The man, Jesus, the Son of God, who'd spent eternity with his Father, who'd never known anything other than his Father's good pleasure, was forsaken on that cross. Jesus went through physical agony, physical cost, and spiritual cost as well. Why did he do those things? Why did he bear the cost? Well, the clue's in verses 19 and 20, given for you, poured out for you. That little word for, picturing this idea of shielding. So imagine someone holding a sword that's coming straight down for your head, and someone else flings a shield in the way. That's what Jesus says his body and blood are doing. His body and blood forming the shield to protect us so that the judgment of God doesn't fall on us, which is what we deserve. The cost of the Lord's Supper. Secondly, the covenant that God makes. Verse 20, this cup is the new covenant in my blood. Covenant's a Bible word. We don't really use it very much in other kind of contexts. It means a deep binding promise, a deep binding promise that cannot or at least should not be broken. And often those promises in the Old Testament are sealed with blood. So Exodus 19 and 20, God makes a covenant with Moses and the people of Israel at Mount Sinai. The Ten Commandments are given. And then a few chapters later, that covenant is confirmed in this ceremony where blood is thrown left, right, and center. Pretty gruesome in some ways, but the point is to say, if either of side breaks the covenant, let it be to them as it is to those whose blood has been shed. That is, if you breach the covenant, you deserve to have your blood shed. Isn't it wonderful that when we come to the Lord's Supper, it isn't that we get a little bit of blood shed, and Jesus saying, if it goes wrong, don't worry, I'll sort it out down the line. No, all the blood has already been shed. All the blood has already been shed on that cross. And what that means is whatever we do, we can't undo this covenant. This promise is binding because Jesus has already borne the penalty of it. There is no way whatsoever that this covenant can be undone. This new covenant in the blood of Jesus is a covenant that cannot be broken. What a wonderful promise. And so this meal that we're about to take, it reminds us of the cost, but it also is a wonderful assurance. Because as we drink, not literally the blood, but as we drink the juice, what are we doing? We are assuring ourselves that the blood has already been spilt, the blood already poured out, and so we will not bear any consequences of our covenant breaking. The ways we turn away from God on a daily basis, we won't bear the penalty for that because Jesus already has, as he bore our sin on the cross. The cost of the Lord's Supper, the covenant made at the Lord's Supper, and thirdly, the command given in the Lord's Supper. Verse 19, this is my body given for you. Do this in remembrance of me. Or probably better, do this for the purpose of remembering me. Do this in order that you might remember me, because I know what you're like. I know how forgetful you are. The Bible time and time again reminds us of our forgetfulness. Not the kind of forgetfulness that means that we don't know where our keys are, which I'm sure we all go through all the time, but real serious spiritual forgetfulness, as we forget what really matters. We forget who we are. We forget who made us. We forget what's really important in life. We forget what we're here for. We forget where we're going. And so Jesus leaves us with something physical and tangible to remind us. Something physical and tangible to remind us, and wonderfully easily repeatable. Jesus didn't leave us with a meal that's really, really hard and complex to reproduce, that takes 18 people in a kitchen for 12 hours to make. He left us with bread and wine. Very simple. Because the point isn't that the meal is impressive. The point is that it symbolizes something amazing. And that Jesus wants his people to do this often in remembrance of him. So that they don't forget. So that their wandering hearts, when they start to go astray, like all of our hearts do, are pulled back to him as we see what it is that he's done for us. Remember me, Jesus says. As you take the Lord's Supper, remember my life, lived in perfect obedience. Remember my miracles, the way that I showed compassion on people, and in doing so gave a flavor of what life with Jesus is like. And most of all, remember my death, that I died for you, the cost I bore for your sakes. Remember me. Do this in order that you might remember me. In a couple of minutes, we're going to take the Lord's Supper together. As we take this meal, where are our minds going to go? Are our minds going to go on what we need to do as soon as we get home? Are our minds going to go on what work's going to look like tomorrow morning? Are our minds going to go to whatever else it is that we've got planned? Something that we think is really important? Or are our minds going to be fixed on Jesus, the one who bore the cost, the one who made the covenant, and one who commands us to remember him? That is what these words have done for me this week as I've looked at them. They've reminded me of the cost. They've pointed me to the covenant. They've reminded me of the command, what I'm meant to be doing as I take the Lord's Supper. I hope that as we take it in a few minutes, they'll do the same for you. Let me pray. I'm going to sing a song to fix our eyes on Jesus, and then we're going to take the Lord's Supper together. Let me pray. Our Father in heaven, we can't begin to imagine the cost that Jesus bore, the physical agony, the spiritual pain, and yet that he bore those things for us. We're so thankful for a covenant that he has paid the penalty for. And we're thankful that you have left us a way to remember you, remember Jesus and all he's done for us. Please, our Father, would you do that work in us? Would our faith be fed as we remember Jesus as we take the Lord's Supper together? Amen.